Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Attention all theater lovers, this Sunday, April 21st, Broadway Podcast Network is holding the first ever Broadway Podfest, a full day of podcast recordings with some of your favorite Broadway stars, live from the Museum of Broadway, which is right in the heart of Times Square. The day begins at 11 a.m. Eastern and features a full day of programming that you don't want to miss. Visit bpn.fm/podfest to get all the details and register to attend for free. That's bpn.fm/podfest.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens. Bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens. Brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things.
Hi, I'm Rob Schneider.
And I'm Kevin David Thomas.
And this is Behind the Curtain, Broadway's Living Legends. Don't forget to follow us on Twitter at Broadway Curtain. And make sure to join our Facebook page at Behind the Curtain, Broadway's Living Legends. And you young kids, follow us on Instagram at Broadway Curtain Podcast.
Plus, you can always listen to all of our episodes, old and new, on the Broadway Podcast Network, iTunes, and Spotify.
Today's guest is one of the theater industry's most respected artists and activists within the Actors Equity Association. Her 50-plus year career in the business has been lauded by both critics and audiences, and she was awarded with a 1974 Tony Award nomination for her indelible turn in We Met on Tiptoes, as well as an Obie for her triumphant one-woman show, A Woman Falls Apart.
On stage, she received high praise for her performances in the farce Let's Try the Other House, the 1978 revival of The Women, starring Alexis Smith, in addition to her work on television in Murder, She Wrote, Cagney and Lace, Matlock, and her own short-lived television show, Nuns Aplenty. And if you were a child of the 80s, you grew up with her on PBS's Secretville.
To tell us what it was like to work with such legends as Yvonne DiCarlo, Audra Lindley, James Whitmore, Pert Kelton, Cesar Romero, and Sham Hepworth, please welcome the winner of the Mary Ann Seldes Award for Best Attendance in the Theater, Miss Pam Goldberg. Pam, how are you today?
Oh, I'm terrific, and thank you for mentioning that. I have to quickly correct you, though, to get off to the wrong foot away.
Gosh.
I didn't work with James Whitmore. No, I did a series of Miracle-Gro commercials. His work.
You replaced him, right? That's right.
Yeah, they wanted to find a female James Whitmore type, and that's how I got that job. So they were a boon for me. I don't mean to correct you right off the bat.
It's good. We always love to
we're
make
usually
sure
pretty
we are correct
good.
With our facts. Yeah.
Thank you, Pam. You know, and speaking of that, you know, considering that you had grown up so much in the stage, did you enjoy doing on-camera work?
I loved it. I loved doing my pilot that did get picked up for a year and a half, Nuns Aplenty. Nuns were very popular in the late 70s, early 80s, you understand, with Sally Field's show.
Of course.
There were a lot of other things about nuns, and this was sort of just nuns getting into hijinks. I played the sleepy nun who kept falling asleep, which was a practical thing that was helpful for me because I didn't really have a lot of lines to learn, you understand.
Oh, yes.
That was a wonderful show. Edie McClurg was on it, Alice Clayton.
Yes. Oh,
Broadway's Dallas Playton, of course. Yeah.
Do you think it'll ever be released on DVD?
Absolutely not. No. The quality wasn't, what's the word? Good, you know, but it was steady work and I learned a lot and I worked with a great group of gals.
I wanted to ask you, if you could distill your on-camera work into one lesson that you still take with you today, what would that one lesson be?
Don't move around so much.
Mm.
Stillness is very important. I've learned that. And you don't really touch anything on set. Everything's done for you. Unlike the theater where, you know, I don't know if any other guest has told you this, but I buy all of my props.
Oh.
In every stage production I've done, I supply all my own props. And I'm going to tell you why.
Okay.
It's because props not only need to be, they not only need to look right, they need to be functional. And I found that over the course of my career, a lot of prop masters and mistresses don't understand that. Mm.
What do you think the most challenging prop is that you've had to supply on your own?
Oh, my God. Probably, well, a gun is always very important. You want that to work.
Mm-hmm.
I had a whip when I played the woman who runs the gay divorcees dude ranch in The Women. So I had a whip, and I wanted to hit it after my laugh lines. And the whip they gave me was too short. This one was very good, and I had to drive over 200 miles and buy one from an actual ranch.
Jesus, my God.
This was at the Ends of the Earth Dinner Theater in Eastern Arizona.
I was going to ask, now you've hit just about every regional theater in America, correct?
More than once, yes.
More than once, my God. Do you have, I mean, I don't want to put you on the spot, but do you have a favorite theater that you've worked at?
It might have been my first, which was the Northland Playhouse in Saugatuck, Michigan. I learned a lot. We had, oh gosh, Cesar Romero, Yvonne DiCarlo. We did Doctor's Dilemma with Brian Ahern, and I played the maid, and I was also on the stage crew for that, because, you know, you're a young actor, and you're often put on the crew as a young person. And I thought I had run into a possible Me Too moment with Mr. Ahern, because he came off stage, I was in the wings, and he stared at me and he just feverishly whispered, "Give it to me, I need it." And he actually was referring to a prop. So it wasn't a Me Too moment, but it was, I handed him his walking stick. And he was a very nice man. He was quite old at the time, and he gave me a bit of advice, and he said, "Pam, the older you get, the more water you need."
How did you find your passion then for the theater?
Yeah.
Well, my uncle, my mother's brother, was a choir director, and he loved singing, and he would take me to New York on trips. My first Broadway show was Mary Martin and Peter Pan.
Oh,
classic. Wow. Yeah.
I later did.
Where did you do it? Who did you play?
Oh, my gosh.
Well, I stood by for Sandy Duncan in her music tent tour.
Oh.
And I was the test. I'm trying to remember the exact phrase they used. I was the flight wire tester. So we would go to a new city, and before they put Sandy up there on the wire, they would send me up there and I'd fly around, and then they would say, "It's good for Sandy," and then bring me down. And I got to tell you, I made a bundle in hazard pay.
Imagine, my goodness.
Wow.
I stood by for Sandy and I went on several times.
Oh my God. Well, that must have been a thrill.
It was terrifying. Are you kidding me? Imagine not being used to flying, and then you're hoisted up in the air. It was one of those experiences where I white knuckled it and got through it.
We love to know your go-to audition song. We ask this of all of our guests.
This was the early 70s, and let me try and remember. I'm more of a yeller than a singer. I sort of holler on pitch. So my go-to audition songs were "A Poor Little Person" from Henry Sweet Henry. I did that a lot. And Shoeless Joe from Hannibal Moe.
Oh.
Oh, like a back, but I do know where.
Wow.
Yeah. I wanted to show that I could hit the back of the back wall of the theater.
Oh, yeah.
Because I'm assuming this was at a time where there was no amplification, correct, in the theaters?
It was just beginning, but not it wasn't everywhere.
But
so
you
no.
were but you were in your Summerstock experience, you were trained though to project, to hit the back
to
of the
to be loud. I have to say, after a few more Summers of Stock, including Cape Playhouse and Coconut Grove, I booked my first Broadway show. I seriously went out for it in 1974, which was a short-lived musical called We Met on Tiptoes.
Oh, yes. Now, you are...
Thank you.
In all the years we've been doing this, you are our first guest that actually appeared in this show. Can you tell us a lot
of them are dead.
Oh, okay. Can you tell us what it was like? What was the story of the show? What was the plot? And what
we
was
We Met on Tiptoes was a musical comedy set in the world of Russian ballet. So it was sort of this, you know, expat American goes to Russia for political reasons and then falls in love with a Russian ballerina. I played this sort of her sort of, you know, mother hen communist maternal figure in the ballet, who was sort of also her dresser slash assistant, named Janice. Comrade Janice. I would also try and espouse communist philosophy to her. You know, half of the show was Borscht Belt humor, and half the show was ballet. So no one was happy.
And
really, we only ran for 2 weeks.
I was going to say it came, but you know, even though for 2 weeks you got a Tony Award nomination,
exactly. So now that says something.
What was
that? Was a shock. I'll tell you that.
Who were you up against that year? Do you remember?
Well, I lost to an actress. I'm sorry, a woman named Janie Sell, who won for that Andrew Sisters show Over Here.
Yes. Yeah.
And
yeah.
She has left the business. So I, in a sense, I lost to a civilian. So that kind of helps soften the blow.
You know, one of the things that we like to do on this podcast is remember the names of directors and choreographers that are no longer with us, people like Joe Layden or Ron Field. So what was it like working with Sham Hepworth?
Sham Hepworth, apparently, well, he came from the world of ballet. He was a very well-known ballet choreographer. I know nothing about ballet. Quite frankly, it bores me. So at that audition, I was extremely calm. My ignorance served me well, you know. And to my left, you know, is Mary Louise Wilson, quaking in her boots because she said, "Oh, this is a great man." And I said, I guess so. I didn't know. So that served me well.
Oh, okay. Sometimes ignorance is bliss, right?
Absolutely.
And then, you know, you followed up, We Met on Tiptoes. And there was no cast recording of this made, that's correct?
Yeah.
No, and I can't find the score either.
And not even a soundboard.
Michael Levine, help us.
Something illegal. Yeah, I would think there'd be something.
I've talked to Jane Klein at the Theater Archive at Lincoln Center.
Haley, yeah.
I think there was a libretto that had a lot of borscht stains on it, and it was rendered illegible. And that was a number where everybody was there was a lot of borscht for some reason in a number, and I think it splashed into the pit.
Absolutely.
Oh, literally. Yeah.
Yeah. Now you followed this up though with an Obie Award, which is very
well.
That came.
Thank you. That was the greatest performance of my career.
And this was for. I'm so sorry. I don't mean to interrupt you. Would you tell us the name of the show, please?
A Woman Falls Apart. Let me tell you what happened.
Please.
After We Met on Tiptoes, got the Tony nomination. I thought, oh, great. This is going to give my career some momentum. Nothing. Yeah. Crickets. The phone ain't ringing. And then I did some more stock. I did some industrials. And then the phone really wasn't ringing. And I got scared. I then got an offer to direct a production of For Colored Girls Who've Considered Suicide, When the Rainbow Is Enough, at Pace University. And I thought, a director? Me? I've never done that. But I took it, needed the work, and I found that I enjoyed it. There was a girl in my company who was wonderful, named Tatiana, just a single name, Tatiana. And she had a psychotic break on Metro North after months of working too many day jobs. And she wanted to create a show about that. So we worked together, and then I contributed and decided that I thought the show would be better served if it were about an older woman who has a psychotic break. And that became A Woman Falls Apart. And we did it at the Dance Theater Workshop, got a rave in the Times, and then it transferred for a year and a half to Cherry Lane.
A year and a half?
Wow.
It was a successful run. Mike Nichols came and saw me in it.
Wow.
All kinds of people came. I actually left to go to L.A. To film Nuns of Plenty before the show closed, and Marion Seldes replaced me.
What is your process like? So you get something like a script for A Woman Falls Apart. Where do you begin? Are you outside in, inside out, Stella Adler? I mean, what is the process for you?
Well, Woman Falls Apart, I really developed with Tatiana. So there were moments where I'd say, okay, well, what is this? What's this moment about? What were you thinking of? And she said, well, I would think of rage about my father. And I had a lot of rage towards my father. So then we just spend the day screaming and crying. And that winnowed it down to a monologue in which I said some poetry, and did some sort of dance movement a bit. It was very 70s, let's be honest. It was very esoteric and very of its time.
That sounds fun, though.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at outsidersmusical.com.
Right. It was very, what's her name, who wrote Runaways?
Liz Suedos.
Yes. She came. She loved it. I think it influenced her, quite frankly.
We asked some of our guests, because at this time, one of the biggest critics was John Simon, who was just not very nice to people. And a lot of the people we talk about, I've been Simonized, and they can, recite right. what their quote was. Did you ever get a John Simon review, good or bad?
He liked to call me masculine a lot. He called me mannish, masculine, husky, hearty, sturdy, words like that, made me sound like, I don't know, Mother Earth or something.
Now, I have to ask you, Secretville is a show that I've heard of, but I've never really watched. I know it was around when I was growing up.
Well, that was weird.
What was Secretville? It was a kid's show?
It was a kid's show. It was, when PBS was doing extremely well by Mr. Rogers and Sesame Street, and they were churning out programming. It was almost kind of hip to do a PBS show. The idea was a town where little kids could come, and I was the mayoress of Secretville, and they could come and tell all of the things they couldn't tell their parents, their secrets. And it got real dark and real weird. And I thought it was strangely, we had sort of right-wing Christian producers, and then it was bizarre. I eventually was slowly written out of the show because I was not considered warm enough. but I know. And I've gotten that comment before. The only job I've actually ever been fired from was from a production of Annie, where I played Miss Hannigan. And I was fired because I was too mean.
Oh, okay. Well,
I know. She is mean. That's who she is.
It's written that way, but okay.
But, you know, I mean...
Hey, you're preaching to the choir. I thought the given circumstances of that script was that this was the Depression, and the stakes were high. She had an orphanage to run, and she was not about to let those little brats, you know, ruin her chance of survival.
No.
So the director and I never saw eye to eye about that. He'd say, Pam, you're too mean. And I said, yes, but that's who this woman is. She is mean. And he'd say, yes, but this is a musical. And I'd say, yes, but I'm an actress. And he'd say, yes, but sometimes we must be an entertainer as well as an actress. So, you know.
Well, it sounds
then he
like
let me go.
Oh, Jesus. Well, it sounds like it was their loss. If you're comfortable talking about this, and if not, we can cut it out. Can you tell us, please, a little bit about what happened to you on your production of Gaslight?
I am comfortable. It changed my life. I did Gaslight right after I moved to New York at the Cape Playhouse in Dennis, Massachusetts. Beautiful theater.
Great theater.
And I played the Lansbury role, the maid. And I had very long hair at the time. And I had sort of, I don't know, but I had been kind of cast in not really ingenues, but soubrette kind of comedic roles. And they never really fit. But after Gaslight, I have to tell you what happened. We opening night, I had this director who wanted me to take the titular lantern, you know, and walk off the stage, down the steps, through the center aisle, and then slam the door. And that would be the end, you know, of the show. It would be this great image and great sound. And he sprung that on me, and I never got to rehearse it. So the moment of truth arrives, I can't see anything, right? It's pitch black. And I went to go down the steps. I stumbled. I fell. The lantern shattered, and I went up in flames. I ripped my costume right off me. Luckily, it was quick rigged for a costume change. And my hair was pin curled under a wig cap with my wig on top and a bonnet on top of that, playing the maid. So all of those things melted on my head into a kind of like a casserole, you know? And then, long story short, I lost all my hair. I survived, but I was never to be able to regrow hair again. Finished the run of the show with a wig, and that wig, it turned out to be the one I've worn to this day. It actually sort of gave me my proper type. And I played, you know, roles like the nurse in Romeo and Juliet and Aunt Eller. And, you know, I played those roles in my 20s, which I was technically still too young for. But with the help of that wig, it sort of sent the right message to the world.
Yes.
I mean, that's also, I think, why I got cast as Conrad Janis and we met on Tiptoes. I was still young.
Hmm. No, that makes total sense. And thank you for sharing that, because I know that's not easy.
Yeah.
I mean, do you...
It is now, because of my experience in Gaslight, it's an equity rule that all wigs must be made out of human hair and not synthetic because of me. So that's the gift I've given the theater community.
I was going to say, you know, it seems like you're very active in actors' equity in terms of, you know, making sure actors are protected. Somebody told me, I have a friend who works in equity, and I don't know if this is true. They said, you know, if you look at who has the most accident reports out of our unions, your name came up a lot.
Well, I think most actors should fill out more accident reports because I think it's good to leave a paper trail, and even things that don't seem very major at the time can, you know, later you realize that you have a fracture or arthritis or something, or tendonitis or plantar fasciitis or brucitis or any number of those things can result from doing something 8 times a week.
Yeah, it's a very long.
Let alone
list.
On a rigged stage.
On a rigged stage, I can't even imagine. Now, I do. We want to end our interview with a couple of things, but before we get to my last couple of questions for you, when were you awarded the Marianne Seldes Award for Best Attendance in the Theater? And what is that award? That's one I'm unfamiliar with.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Well, that's an award, Equity Awards for actors who can prove through things like accident reports and stage management reports that they have never missed performances. And I have never missed any, except for the time in Gaslight when I went up in flames. Although technically that was at the end of the show. So
one
could argue that
yeah.
I did complete that performance.
I would think so.
But no, I've never missed. I've gone on with a fever. I've gone on sick. I've gone on after upsetting phone calls. Diagnosis is all kinds of stressful things. But that's what you learn. And that's what young people don't know is that you have to go on.
And Pam, do you teach now or do you enjoy teaching? Have you taught any master classes or anything?
I give master classes on meal prep. Specifically, because I feel as though it is the gateway to a successful budding actor's career. I think if you can learn how to cook chili and ratatouille and portion it for the week, then maybe you can afford to take that dance class or that music class that will get you the job. I teach practical things like that.
Is this the longest you've gone without being on a stage?
No, there were some dark months in the late 70s where time really stretched by and I took some questionable jobs. I did Follies at an aquarium.
Oh,
and like the Sondheim Goldman?
Yeah. I played Stella Deems at the Marina on the Pacific Dinner Theater of the Deep. And the people would watch Follies and eat fish sticks. And then after the show, go look at the aquariums. And they made dolphins
Sounds great.
Jump out at the end of Beautiful Girls. They made dolphins jump out. It was strange, but... and talk about accident reports, all the splashing on that stage, good Lord. And
oh
the
goodness.
Sort of octogenarians in that show, sprains
I would have
and
to have,
bones
right.
broken.
And then, you know, I'd like, if you now, knowing all that you know now, could go back and talk to that young girl from Kalamazoo who's just about to start this journey, what do you know now that you wished you had known then?
Oh, I would say that you're right. There's more to life than Michigan.
Well, that's lovely. Pam, this has been an absolute pleasure. I cannot tell you how much Kevin and I appreciate you taking time out to be with us tonight. And when this quarantine is over, we look forward to seeing you. Were you working on a show when this?
I was supposed to do a Doll's House Part 2 again. I've done it a few times.
You've done that a lot. Yeah, I've seen that.
It was canceled. But, you know, I'm also working on a little cabaret show, I have to say.
Oh.
And I hope to do it at hotels that will put me up, you know.
Yes, that's fingers crossed for that. And we'll keep an eye out for that. And we'll keep an eye out for the hotels,
and
too.
Promote whatever you have.
Yes.
We would love to, you know, share with
Do you have
listeners.
Any social media, Pam?
Well, my agent, Jasmine, is sort of pushing me in that direction. So maybe that'll be my next project
Good.
While in quarantine.
Good. We'd love to see that, and we'd love a book at some point, but we cannot wait for this show. Pam, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you both. You're wonderful.
Oh, thank you. All right. Till next time, everyone. Goodbye.
Bye, everybody.
Hey, everybody. So... we are very excited to have with us the wonderful Philip. I hope I'm saying your last name correct. Taratula?
Yeah.
Oh, damn it. I thought I was so close. Who has created this character, Pam Goldberg, that both Kevin and I are so obsessed with, it is ridiculous. Philip, where did this inspiration come from?
Oh my gosh. I spent a couple years doing a lot of regional theater and loving it and working with actors of all ages. And I was so just inspired by actors in their 70s and 80s who are still doing it and still loving it. And
yeah.
I like marveled at their energy and so, and then also thought of myself at that age, doing gigs at every level and the type of survival instincts that takes. So I guess that's kind of where it came from. And she's a blend of many, many, many people, I think.
Yes.
I absolutely love that. Oh, no, go ahead, Kev. Sorry.
No, I was just going to say, I think that honestly is what so many people relate to is like, I think we all see a little bit of ourselves. We see a little of our future selves, but we also see of the people, because so many of us in the business see, we know this person very, very well. And I think,
yep, she's full of unsolicited advice. She's full of, you know, warnings about your physical safety and her safety. And it all comes from the best of intentions, you know,
deep
from her
passion, but you yes. know that she was kind of a little like a troublemaker in equity meetings too. Like she's the one who raises her hand and is the one mm-hmm. who, like the, yes, but
A stickler for detail. Yeah.
Love it.
It's also, this is why I love your guys' podcast is that theater is lore, right? It's all based on stories and passing it down. And I remember seeing, Elaine Stritch at Liberty. And I remember like loving it.
Yeah.
And then, but at the time I was younger and I was like, I don't really know who this woman really is. And I saw the show. And of course then I learned who she was and I remember loving the show, but then also leaving and thinking about it and going, what if she made all that up?
Right. Well, and her stories are legendary. Like that.
I love that.
They're stock stories that,
yeah.
Yes, you're right.
I mean, all of it, but you know what I mean?
Like, yeah, no, absolutely. Yes,
of course.
Heavily embellished. So I always, there was a seed in the back of my mind to create a character that was like, had this long career that was ultimately fake.
it's so genius. And you're right. Cause I think when you're doing regional theater, you look at people like that. You look at the Pams and you go, oh my God, that's going to be me one day. But then you see them working at like 70 or 80 and you're like, that's going to be me. I hope that's going to be me someday. That enthusiasm.
Oh, and most of the
time,
they're the first one at the theater, do you know? Yes. And they're the first one.
Off
and
book, you know, ready to go. And, yeah.
Off know, book. Yeah.
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 The record is so yeah. true. You know, like that's.
You listen to her and you go, oh yeah, of course there was a production called, you know, We Met on Tiptoes. Of course.
Right. Right.
It was at the Winter Garden, wasn't it? Yeah, I remember that. Michael Levine said he had a song.
Yeah. Again, to your point, Rob, I feel like people in the theater do that. I've seen people do that where like they'll clearly lie. They'll be like, "Oh, yes. I know that play."
Yeah.
Because we always say yes. Actors say yes to everything. I mean, that's...
Yeah, totally. Or like, you know, We Met on Tiptoes. Oh, right. Yeah, that's a great score. Great score. Mm-hmm. Well, I did a show at Ars Nova that is like is called An Evening with Pam Goldberg. That was kind of like imagine a 92nd Street Y talk, you know, where she, with a moderator that goes through her whole career. I was going to do that again before COVID, but I'm hoping it once, you know, we get back to some kind of new normal, I'll be able to do that again. But and I had friends who aren't actors and aren't in theater come and see this character. And they're like, I mean, I don't know, obviously all of these references, but I know this woman. I sort of understand this kind of survivor type person who's constantly plugging away and never turned down a job. I mean, I don't know. There's something that hits people like
universal.
That,
you know? Yeah.
Yeah. Today. And you can find her at my Instagram, which is at P Teratula.
When she pops up on my Instagram feed, I am the happiest person on earth because I'm like, I know I'm going to get a laugh. I know I'm going to get a huge laugh.
You're bringing
out of this.
A lot of joy. Pam brings so much joy.
Pam brings so much joy. Yes.
I must say.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks.
Thank you, Philip. Well done.
Right. That's it. This was our favorite thing this week.
Yay.
Bye, everybody.
Raindrops on roses and whiskers on kittens, bright copper kettles and warm woolen mittens. brown paper packages tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.